Good morning, everybody. I'm Karen Davenport with the Center for American Progress, and I'm going to be moderating the call this morning. The Center for American Progress's work on reducing racial and ethnic disparities is an integral part of our commitment to making the American healthcare system more equitable and more effective for all Americans. We're releasing two reports this morning, one about the provisions of the Affordable Care Act that can help reduce disparities in chronic illness, and the second about using data collection and analysis to reduce racial and ethnic health disparities. Both of these papers are available on our website, which is AmericanProgress.org. I'm going to introduce the speakers and then turn the microphone over to Leslie Russell, the author of these papers, to do a brief overview of them. And starting with Leslie, Leslie Russell is a visiting fellow at the Center for American Progress and a visiting professor in the Department of Health Policy at George Washington University. A large part of Leslie's work here has been focused on racial and ethnic healthcare disparities and the opportunities to address these that are presented through the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Our other two speakers are Kathy Lim Koh, Kathy of the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum. Kathy is president and CEO of the forum and has more than 30 years' experience in healthcare advocacy and community involvement in public health initiatives. Our third speaker is Jacqueline Ayers. Jacqueline is the Legislative Director for Health and Education at the National Urban League. The scope of the work that the League does means that Jacqueline brings a perspective of the issues beyond healthcare that contribute to the health and well-being of communities of color. And Leslie, if you can get us started.
Good. Thank you very much. The two reports we're releasing today follow on from a previous report done this time last year, before the Affordable Care Act was finally passed, that looked at a broad range of issues around healthcare disparities and providing equitable access to healthcare services. My focus in all of these reports has been on how Americans from racial and ethnic minorities, arguably groups that are most disadvantaged in the current healthcare system, will benefit from robust and thoughtful implementation of the provisions in the healthcare reform law. In particular, chronically ill Americans from racial and ethnic minorities have much to gain from the Affordable Care Act. These Americans are more likely to be without health insurance coverage, they make up more than half of America's uninsured, and they suffer higher rates of chronic illness than the general population. They're more likely to have the risk factors such as obesity that predispose them to chronic illnesses, and they're less likely to receive the preventive screenings, regular care, and necessary medications that could prevent or ameliorate their conditions. Being uninsured often means postponing needed healthcare services. That's why people of colour in our nation are diagnosed at more advanced disease stages. And perhaps more disturbingly, that once diagnosed, they receive poorer care. People with chronic illnesses who don't receive regular medical care run the risk of disabling and expensive health consequences. For instance, individuals whose diabetes is not properly controlled are more susceptible to blindness, nerve damage, limb amputation or dialysis for the rest of their lives. Inevitably, they are sicker and they die sooner. My report makes the case that improving access to health insurance coverage and primary care services, addressing disparities in treatment and quality of care, providing culturally competent care, and boosting patient literacy are investments that will make a real difference in the lives of Americans from racial and ethnic minorities with chronic illnesses or at risk of chronic illness. A key tenet of healthcare reform and making the healthcare system sustainable into the future is the recognition that most chronic disease can be prevented. Improving access to prevention services in combination with better management and coordination of the care delivered to the chronically ill is an investment that pays off in the medium term with reduced rates of healthcare service utilization and in the long term with better health outcomes and more productive lives. The second report we're releasing today, Measuring the Gaps, looks at how the Affordable Care Act's expanded requirements for the collection and analysis of healthcare disparities data can help drive efforts to understand and address the current racial and ethnic disparities. We need to understand why people of colour are significantly less likely than whites to receive needed therapeutic procedures and more likely to receive a lower quality and intensity of care than other Americans who present with identical health problems. We need to understand why people of colour are rarely part of clinical trials. We need to understand why immigrants, even those who are low income and without health insurance, generally have better health than those born in this country. That might help us find the way to tackle some of the causes of healthcare disparities. We do know that patients feel most comfortable with doctors similar to themselves. But because minorities are very underrepresented in the healthcare professions, it's significantly more difficult for them to find a doctor that they trust to provide regular care that is culturally competent, without bias, and respectful of their dignity. The problems, of course, are magnified if there are language barriers. Better data and robust implementation of the provisions in healthcare reform will tackle all these issues. My work has highlighted just how inadequate the current data are. I found it's almost impossible to track changes in healthcare measures over time. It's small wonder that reports on healthcare disparities mount even as the gaps widen. The ultimate goal must be that all Americans, regardless of race or ethnicity, get the quality healthcare services they need when they need them. The total annual cost of healthcare disparities, including medical costs and indirect costs such as lost productivity, lost wages, absenteeism, family leave, and premature death, is about $415 billion every year. We can ill afford to ignore this high cost in dollars and human life, especially when much of the burden from chronic illnesses is preventable. There's been considerable debate this week around efforts to dismantle healthcare reform. And unfortunately, we've not heard in that noisy debate the voices of those people, the Latinos, the African Americans, Native Americans and Alaskans, people from Asia and the Pacific Islands, whose healthcare is currently substandard and who will gain so much from the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. So it's my hope that these reports will help their voices to be heard and their case to be made. We cannot afford, on the grounds of equity and economics, to ignore the issue of health and healthcare disparities any longer. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. We'll now have remarks from Kathy Lim Coe. Kathy?
Hi, thank you so much. I'd really like to thank the Center for American Progress for producing this wonderful set of reports, which highlight the link between improved data collection and reducing health disparities. This report comes at a pivotal time as our federal and state governments continue the important work of implementing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. There are many components of healthcare reform that will have far-reaching implications in our efforts, all of our efforts, to keep America's families healthy. For Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders, one of those components is making sure that our policymakers, public health experts, local leaders, and service providers have the necessary data, research, and information to set priorities and allocate resources to address particular disparities in our communities. The new healthcare reform law includes provisions that increase and standardize the collection and reporting of data to include race, ethnicity, primary language, sex, and disability for all federally funded healthcare programs, activities, and surveys by 2013. In addition to requiring data collection using standardized categories, the new law also requires all federally funded population surveys to collect enough data to allow for reliable reporting of racial and ethnic subgroups. These provisions will greatly improve the ability to document racial and ethnic disparities, especially among some of the smaller populations in our communities who are typically either excluded from the reporting of survey findings or grouped as the greatly feared other category. The new requirement to collect and report data on ethnic subpopulations is critical to our communities, which trace our heritages to more than 50 countries and to dozens of distinct ethnic groups. We speak more than 100 different languages and represent a multitude of cultures, religions, and immigration paths. And despite what may be commonly thought, we exist in large numbers and are growing the most quickly in cities such as Phoenix, Arizona, Atlanta, Georgia, and my own hometown, Cleveland, Ohio. So I also want to emphasize the importance of disaggregating Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders as a separate category from Asian Americans. Because, of course, the health challenges faced by the Samoan community in Salt Lake City, Utah, differ vastly from those faced by the Vietnamese community in Houston, Texas. To illustrate the importance of disaggregating racial and ethnic populations in the collection and reporting of data, let me tell you a story. Susan Shinagawa discovered a lump in her breast in 1991. In trying to get a diagnosis, She was told by one surgeon who refused to conduct a biopsy because she was too young that, quote, Asian women don't get breast cancer, quote, end quote. After many months and three exams later, Susan was diagnosed with breast cancer. After her diagnosis and her experiences with the healthcare system, Susan resolved to ensure that people are not misdiagnosed because of medical stereotyping, and to ensure that cancer programs and services are responsive to Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. So began Susan's personal journey towards becoming one of the most ardent cancer advocates for our communities. And in 1997, our organization, the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum, worked with Susan to form the Asian and Pacific Islander National Cancer Survivors Network. Since then, Susan and the coalition have advocated for increased and improved data collection and reporting that gives doctors, researchers, funders, and policymakers a clear picture of cancer's impact on Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. We've made a lot of progress. However, almost 20 years later, we still hear stories from Asian American women who are told, again, quote, Asian women don't get breast cancer, even though we know that Japanese American women in California have the overall highest breast cancer incidence rates, and that Filipinas in California have the overall poorest breast cancer survival rates. We know this because, by law, the California Cancer Registry collects and reports cancer data by detailed ethnicity. However, we don't know a similar picture, and we don't know breast cancer rates among Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander women in other states. It's time for health data regarding our populations to enter the 21st century. The identification and categorization of our diverse ethnicities as separate and specific groups allows for disparities and, in particular, inequities to be detected, documented, and then addressed. It provides a basis for the allocation of funds and resources that support health programs and prevention services and supports the monitoring of progress towards equity. Enriching healthcare data to provide information particular to distinct groups within all of our diverse populations is the first step in providing policymakers, public health experts, local leaders, and service providers with the ability to set priorities and allocate resources to address health disparities in all of our vulnerable populations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. And next we turn to Jacqueline Ayers.
Thank you, Karen. And thank you to Dr. Russell and the Center for American Progress for inviting the National Organ Link to join today's call. We are really excited to support these two new reports that are focused on the numerous benefits of the Affordable Care Act and that are specifically highlighting how this new law will seek to close the health disparities gap. The National Urban League is the nation's oldest and largest community-based movement devoted to empowering African Americans to enter the economic and social mainstream. This year, in our 100th year, we have been focused on reaching our social justice goals in the areas of jobs, housing, education, and healthcare by 2025. And across the country, we have more than 98 affiliates in 36 states and the District of Columbia, providing direct services that impact and improve the lives of more than 2 million people nationwide. Urban League affiliates around the country are working to respond to the needs of their community, and the access to affordable, quality health care is of a key concern to our clients. As this report on the chronic illness points out, there are many factors, from economic, social, and environmental, that contribute to the disparity gap. These complicating factors are why it's even more critical that those suffering with chronic illness are able to receive the assistance with management and coordination of the appropriate care. For example, one of the most serious chronic illnesses impacting African Americans is diabetes, with more than 30 million African Americans suffering from this disease. With diabetes being a major risk factor for heart and kidney disease, it's not uncommon for individuals to be suffering from multiple chronic illnesses at the same time, which can lead to an increased risk for complications and increased cost. At the National Urban League, one of our signature health programs is known as Saving Our Sons. With a partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine, we work in places like Lorain County, Ohio, with the Savings Our Sons program to provide assistance to individuals who are helping to manage their diabetes and obesity prevention. But these important type of community-based programs are just important wraparound services for the management of chronic illness. Those suffering with chronic illness need a system that can support oversight of care. And there are several provisions of the Affordable Care Act that will benefit those with chronic illness by expanding coverage and reducing costs. Not only will individuals have a reduction in out-of-pocket costs, but overall health care spending in public health programs and private insurance will see a reduction in medical care expenditure. Important investments and expansion of community health centers, which so many of the medically underserved have to rely on, will help to increase responsive and timely care that can improve disease management, all the while controlling cost. Another important component to adequately address the needs of racial and ethnic minorities interacting with the healthcare system is to improve the in-treatment experience and the quality of care received. The Affordable Care Act will improve access for communities of color by ensuring cultural competency among all healthcare professionals, as well as seek to diversify the health workforce. African Americans are currently underrepresented in the healthcare workforce, and the Affordable Care Act will provide scholarships, grants, loan repayment programs to increase minority faculty members and health professionals. At the National Urban League, we have been particularly focused during this economic downturn on responding to the jobs crisis. We believe that the provisions of the Affordable Care Act will go a long way to continue to see growth for minorities in the healthcare industry. With that, I finally just want to note that we are very excited about these reports and the opportunity to help raise awareness about all of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act and what it will do to improve the delivery of health care to African Americans. The National Urban League looks forward to continuing to work with the Center for American Progress and our partners on this call to help ensure the full implementation of these important provisions under the Affordable Care Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. At this point, I would like to turn things over to the operator to see if there are any questions.
And ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, ladies and gentlemen, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And your first question comes from Joyce Jones.
Hello. Thanks for taking this call. I wondered if I'm actually writing this story for Diverse Issues in Higher Education, and I'm wondering if any of your groups have made any efforts to expand access to higher education and post-secondary credentials for minorities in the healthcare profession.
So this is Jacqueline. The National Urban League signature programs in the area of education primarily focus on the K through 12 after-school programs and extended learning programs and supplemental educational services. However, we do a lot of job training programs in our urban community centers across this country, and therefore we are often thinking about the K through 12 as preparation for career and college workforce. And so certainly as we seek to see some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act implemented specific to minority healthcare workforce, we will be thinking through implementation about how the higher education community can help to increase opportunities for minorities, because we certainly see them as a partner.
Thank you.
Leslie, I wondered if you had anything else to say on workforce?
Yes, indeed. I mean, specifically around the healthcare workforce, there are a number of provisions within the Affordable Care Act that will really open up opportunities for people from minority groups and people from underserved areas. We know very well that one of the best ways to encourage people to go back and work in underserved communities is to educate people from those communities. Those are the people who are most likely to go back and work there. So there are a number of provisions in the ACA that will provide scholarships and other financial help during education and after that time to encourage doctors, nurses, dentists, other primary care workers to come out of underserved communities and to go back into those communities to work.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from Danielle Hawks of the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health. Ms. Ox, your line is open.
If you've muted your phone, you may want to take it off mute.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, sorry. And I really appreciate this discussion. It's very interesting. We just have a question about the types of illnesses that have been listed as chronic and the ones that are not being listed as chronic, such as HIV and AIDS and certain cancers and things like that, and how that affects disparities.
Oh, I don't think anyone would say that HIV, AIDS, or cancer were not chronic illnesses. It's probably true that in my report I haven't highlighted HIV, AIDS in particular to the extent that perhaps one might do given its burden on certain communities of colour. But those are very much chronic illnesses. And even somebody who has had cancer and is in remission and apparently recovered always goes on to live their life through the healthcare system in a different way than someone who's not had cancer. So I think we would very much view those as chronic illnesses.
This is Kathy. I'd actually like to respond too. In our communities, both acute as well as chronic, as well as those kind of conditions, as Leslie said, such as HIV and cancer, that have not only acute episodes but chronic components to how people are living with those conditions, all of those things still remain masked by the fact that data is still so much lumped together for our population. And so while we see really widely varying rates in those places, such as California, where we can track the data and we can understand it by specific population, and this is not just by ethnicity but other kinds of status that would be risk factors, we can really understand better how to address those more acute conditions as well as chronic conditions and get the right resources to those populations and to those individuals. So absolutely, these issues around data collection, reporting, and how they reveal disparities cut across all conditions, not just chronic ones.
This is Danielle again. Do you see, I was certain that the reports covered these issues, but I'm wondering if the Affordable Care Act is covering those issues to everyone's standards. We're concerned that it may not be.
Well, I think we need to remain incredibly vigilant, and our amazing staff is continuing to track a lot of this around the data collection standards throughout the Affordable Care Act, and then to make sure that not only is the data collection responsive to the diverse needs of all of our communities, but also that the language access provisions are also really addressed, because for language minorities, regardless of their specific ethnicity, the ability to provide better care in a more timely fashion, provide good prevention, all of that really is also dependent on language access, which otherwise creates a structural barrier for people to care.
I'd like to follow on from that, and Kathy used a very good word there. She talked about being vigilant about how the provisions of the Affordable Care Act were implemented. And one of the arguments that I make is that there are many provisions in the Affordable Care Act that don't actually mention minorities, that don't mention specifically any particular chronic illness. One of the things I think about particularly in this case is mental illness, for example. But thoughtful implementation with outside voices making sure that the issues are covered off can make sure that a lot of the different provisions in the bill, think about medical homes, for example, can be implemented in such a way that they will specifically help people of colour with particular chronic conditions that we are worried about.
Great, thank you.
And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And at this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Thank you. At this point, then, we will wrap up this call. Thank you for the lively set of questions and answers and for participating in this call this morning. Again, these reports are available at AmericanProgress.org. And thank you for joining us, and thank you to the speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.